Welcome back. Sitting in for George Norrie, say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. Let's play a little thought experiment. What would totalitarian governments of the past have looked like if they were never defeated? So try to imagine that. What would a totalitarian government of the past have looked like if they were never defeated? The Nazis operated with 20th century technology, and it still took a world war to stop them. How much more powerful and permanent could the Nazis have been if they had beat the U.S. to the atomic bomb? Think about that. Controlling the most advanced technology of the time could have solidified Nazi power and, of course, changed the course of history. When we think of existential risks, even like nuclear war or asteroid impacts, they often come to mind. Yet there's one future threat that is less well known, and while it doesn't involve the extinction of our species, it could be just as bad. It's called the world in chains scenario. World in chains scenario, where, like the preceding thought experiment, a global totalitarian government uses a novel technology to lock a majority of the world into perpetual suffering. And if it sounds grim, you'd be right, but is it likely? Researchers and philosophers are beginning to ponder how it might come about, and more importantly, what we can do to avoid it. And you can read the rest of this story, titled The Grim Fate That Could Be Worse Than Extinction. It's in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. That one's worth a read for sure. Back to more of my conversation with Jim Harold as we share some stories around the campfire right here on Coast to Coast AM. Jim Harold, the host of the Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harold's Campfire. Go to jimharold.com, jimharold.com. And Jim, as I'm going down the list of the top 20 campfire stories that you've cultivated this year, they seem to be getting a little more darker, a little more ominous, sinister, if you will. What would a Friday night be without a story of alien abduction by reptilians? Tell me about, I think it was Danny in California who called in.
Yeah, this was one that was, again, it's one of those disturbing ones, and I think it's a case where even the caller doesn't know what to make of it. He was a young kid, I think early teenage, you know, probably 12 or 13 or something, and his family had driven to Mexico, and they driving back through Sonora, and it was a pickup truck. And you remember back in the day, people used to ride back in the back, you know, you know, when we used to play with sharp objects and things like that in the pickup
and run with scissors. That's right,
exactly, and stuff like that. But anyway, he was riding back, and he woke up from a nap, and as they were driving back home, to the States, and he felt a sense of unease, like somebody was following them. And he remembered being just really leery watching cars and things. But they got home okay. It was early evening, 6:30, 7 o'clock, Mom and Dad decided they were going to go to bed. They were tired from the long drive, and him and his sister said, we're going to stay up and watch some TV. So they stayed up. Of course, they fell asleep on the living room floor, as kids do when they do that sort of thing. And he remembered he woke up in the middle of the night, I think 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and he said he saw a bright light coming in by the door. And, you know, doors a lot of times in houses, you'll have, like, the glass panes on either side, kind of frosted glass for privacy or whatever.
Right, right.
And that's what they had. He said he saw this multicolored strobe light. And he mentioned that it's interesting because they live right near the Mojave Desert, and they're the last house on the cul-de-sac. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of their house, then the desert. And so it's it wasn't like a police car or ambulance. And he went and looked at it, and he thought, well, that's strange, but I'm going to go back and lay back down. He lays back down. Yeah, they have air mattresses, you know, camping out on the living room while you're watching TV as a kid. Goes back to his air mattress, and the light keeps going, and it's bothering him. And he gets back up. He went to look, and all of a sudden there's this flash of light, and he blacks out, and he wakes up. But when he wakes up, he's not in the house, but he's in a room. He's lying down on a table. He says he's shackled to a table. His hands and feet are shackled. He says there's a light, like the lamp when you go to the dentist. And by his side, there are these tall figures, 7 or 8 foot tall. He said that they look reptilian. He said they had eyes the size of baseballs. They were kind of wearing what he described as monk hoods. They had yellow eyes. And then the eyeball, you have like a little slit, very reptilian looking. Instead of a full nose, they just had slits where the nostrils would be. A thin mouth, sandpaper-like skin. He said that the skin was colored kind of yellowish-brownish. Long, spindly figures. And there's figures to his side. He looks down the foot of his bed, and there's another tall figure just like this. And then he hears the sound of a drill. He totally freaks out. He starts cussing and yelling and struggling. Then he blacks out, and that's all he remembers. When he wakes up, it's sunrise. He's several feet away from where his air mattress is on the floor. The only person he ever told in his family was mom, who kind of brushed it off, oh, you had a bad dream. And this is one of those things, and see, these things, Richard, as you know, don't necessarily have neat and tidy endings. He doesn't, as an adult now, you know, he can't forget this, but he doesn't know what to do with it. Was it just an incredibly vivid dream? Was it a real experience? He says he's talked about and thought about doing hypnosis, but he's almost afraid to find out what it was. And he did say it could have been a dream, but I sensed in his description of it that he felt it was real. And, I mean, regardless of what you think these are, when people have these experiences, they can be very disturbing and can affect people for years to come. So was it a dream?
Oh,
was
yes,
it not?
Yes.
Is a dream real? I don't know. But that it might as well have been real for him, and maybe it was.
Well, exactly. I mean, you and I have both, I'm sure, talked to, you know, dozens and dozens of people who believe they were abducted by aliens. And,
right.
You know, yes, some of them are not as sincere or as convincing as others, but I've heard enough that these people have been traumatized, and in some cases, they're broken. They're broken people.
Yeah.
And, I mean, again, what do you do with that?
Yeah, and I only spent a very short time with Danny, and my impression was is that he was well-adjusted, and he was doing okay, but it still bothered him. It still bothered him. And that's, you know, unless he gets answers, whether it's hypnotism or whatever, that'll probably bother him the rest of his life.
Let me ask you, if something like that happened to you, would you want to undergo undergo hypnosis, some sort of a regression to see if you could find out what actually happened, or would
yes.
you just as soon let it go?
Yes, I would want to know. I would want to know. I think it's kind of the curiosity. I got the cat kind of thing. I would just have to know, or have to, even if it's not a guarantee that I would know, I would want to try. Yes.
Yeah, that one's
no
a tough one for me.
Richard,
I'm not so sure.
Out there listening.
Exactly. Let's make that perfectly clear. That's yes, exactly. You know, I started off the show with a quote from John Lennon, and as I'm looking at this next story, I'm thinking of, you know, that Beatles song "Nowhere Man." This could be
sort of
the B side of that single, "Mr. Nobody," not "Nowhere Man," but "Mr. Nobody."
Yeah.
Who's Mr. Nobody?
Yeah, I love that song. This is one of my favorite kind of mid '60s Beatles songs. That's why I'm a big Beatles fan. That's why I love the fact you're talking Beatles tonight. Mr. Nobody, Mary from Louisiana. And they bought a house in 2011, young family, first home, 3 bedrooms. It was her husband, and their daughter, who was 5. First night they move into the house, they're exhausted. They slept in the middle of the floor. Once they turned out the lights, Mary says the house came alive. Noises and drawers shutting and opening. Someone walking in the house. But they were the only ones there. Now, they were skeptics, so they just said, the house is settling. Well, as sometimes happens to the best of us, their master bedroom became their junk room. And for some reason, this particular room felt unsettling. One day, Mary was mentioning to her husband she needed something from the junk room, and their five-year-old daughter perks up and says, "Mr. Nobody's room." And they ask who that was, and she said, "Well, there was a guy who lived in the room, and he was, and he, these aren't the words she used, but the way she described him, he was middle-aged, well-groomed, a man in a suit, another man in a suit, called Mr. Nobody." And they thought, well, that's odd, but, you know, that's just a kid talking. But they go through the next couple of months updating their home, and every time they change something, activity spikes. Pictures would fly off of walls. Light bulbs would burst all over the house. Mary collects portraits. She got one for Christmas. She arranged it and took a photo to send to her mom. And in it, she sees one of these photos. She sees a perfect reflection of a woman in one of the photos. But there was no woman there other than her. They had a second daughter, and shortly after that, her husband was sent to Texas for work, and she finds herself alone with a six-year-old and a new baby. She was exhausted. One particular night, she didn't know how long she was asleep, but she specifically felt someone shake her awake. She wakes up. Her six-year-old's not there. The baby is obviously not waking her up. She looks at the baby monitor, and it was turned off. And she knew instinctively that this is why she had been awoken, because something or someone was telling her to go check on the baby. The baby ended up crying in the room, and Mary was grateful that someone was looking out for her. Then a few nights later, she wakes up to the sound of a woman softly singing lullabies to the baby on the monitor. She went to the baby room, heard nothing while she was there, and the baby was sleeping peacefully. And she's the only adult woman in the house. Also, as she grows up, her younger daughter starts pointing to corners and says, "Man, man," and says, "Bye, man," to him as if she's walking away. Mary and her husband finally become ready to accept there's something going on in their home. They said they've seen a dripping silver substance, speakers turning on. Once a difficult-to-turn-on light fixture turned on by itself with an audible click. Mary decided to find out more about the people who used to live there. It turned out that an old woman had died peacefully in their home, and the date of the death was the same date of that light turning on. She feels that the family who used to live there, and those are the only people who had lived there prior to Mary and her family. But that's really, to me, that's interesting. I mean, the poltergeisty stuff is interesting, but even to me, more interesting, and this is something I believe, that kids might be able to see things we can't see before we're trained that we shouldn't see them or shouldn't believe in them, or maybe they're closer to the veil because they're younger. But I do believe children see things that we as full-grown adults cannot see.
Right, and you know, it's going to give some parents pause the next time their young children tell them about something that they dismiss as an imaginary friend.
Yes.
I had an imaginary friend when I was little. Well, I thought I did. He was just using me. He wasn't my friend, but that's another story. Anyway, you have another story here, though, about an imaginary friend named Beba.
Oh, yeah, this is a good one. Very much along a similar, not quite as sinister, but the same kind of line. Jared from New Hampshire told this. This actually was a story that Jared was told by his parents, because he was just kind of a toddler at the time this happened. He would talk to his parents about a man named Beba. He told his parents that Beba would come to him when he was in his crib, and that Beba had white hair, a white beard, and wore a suit. Sounds a little like Santa Claus, but anyway, it seemed like Beba was friendly. And one particular night, Jared was with his parents, and he pointed out the front window to the lawn and said, "Daddy, Beba." His father asked him, what is he talking about? And he pointed again at the lawn and said, "Right there." He put his hands in the air and said, "Beba, Beba." He said that creeped his parents out because they couldn't see anything. The family moved out about a year later, and a friend of Jared's dad moved into the same apartment. Now, a few months later, Jared's dad's friend came over to visit and asked Jared's dad, had they ever experienced anything weird at that apartment? He went on to describe his own sons, this friend, this family friend. He said that his son keeps talking about this man named Biba. And it was total validation for Jared's family that he'd really experienced something. Now, Jared says he's lived in the same town his whole life, and he learned that others in the apartment complex had also experienced paranormal activity. A woman in the complex reported that there was a female spirit in her apartment that seemed to be possessive of the woman's husband. The woman told of being pushed and knocked down her steps by this spirit. Now, Jared's father did ask around trying to find out if there was any history in the area that accounts for Biba. He learned that there had been a man named Bob that died in or near the complex. Jared thinks that Biba was his 3-year-old version of Bob or Bobby Biba. So there's...
Interesting. Now, when your children were growing up, did they have imaginary friends?
I think my oldest daughter did, yeah. Yeah, I think she did. I don't remember my youngest daughter. I know one thing. Our dogs see things, and that's another question. Do pets see things? Even recently, as maybe a week or two ago, I remember our one dog, Rambo, and it's funny because he's a small dog, and we call him Rambo, or at least we think it's funny. But anyway...
He's small, but he knows kung fu, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's right. But he will, like, stare in the air, and you'll look and see if maybe there might be a fly or something or a spider, and there's nothing there or nothing that we can see. And he very intently, and he'll do this quite a bit. And we're wondering, are we having visitations from loved ones? You know, what's going on? But, yeah, I think kids and pets see things.
Oh, for sure. Cats, all of a sudden, for no reason, they'll feel totally possessed by the idea that they have to be in another room, and they'll just tear off into that room and then come back.
Yep.
You know, what possessed them to go into that room? What was the hurry? Absolutely, I believe that. Let me ask you quickly before we head into the break here. Yes, kind of a yes-no thing, but will you allow a Ouija board into your house?
It's in my house, but I won't use it. My wife has one from when she was a teenager. Won't use it.
All right. Good answer. we'll come back, and we're going to open up the phone lines. Questions, if you've heard Jim Harrell's Campfire or the Paranormal Podcast, maybe you have a specific question about an episode you heard. And also, maybe you've got a tale of high strangeness yourself right here on Coast to Coast AM. Sitting in for George Norrie, welcome back. Great to be with you on a Friday night into Saturday morning. Friday night, that means open lines, top of the hour, and we'll sort of continue along in this vein, and we'll start to take some calls here shortly with Jim Harrell, the host of the Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harrell's Campfire. The Nazca Lines, ancient formations built by humans and only visible from above. You know, you've seen or read about them or seen them perhaps in Peru. They're drawings that depict birds, monkeys, killer whales, and more. Theories about their ultimate purpose abound. Now, the geoglyphs are thought to have been made by the Nazca civilization, who inhabited the region for around 800 years, beginning in 200 BC. The purpose of the lines has remained a mystery. Archaeologists have suggested a number of theories, including that the geoglyphs had religious or cultural significance, were involved with water somehow, or perhaps were related to astronomical observations. There's still no consensus on the lines' meaning, though. It seems likely that they may have served more than one function. You can read more about the enigma of Peru's Nazca Lines, these giant geoglyphs etched in the desert sand, in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. I will be back in the Coast Air Chair tonight, Saturday night into Sunday morning. Angelic encounters in the first half. Investigators, authors Allie Anderson Henson and Donna Howell will join me to share stories of angelic intervention, what the Bible says angels are, answers to such lingering questions such as whether holy angels can default from God's army, whether they have wings, can they read minds, how the plight of Joan of Arc impacts our views of angels, and the fierce capacity of angels' powers, including their strength in warfare, ability to fly, and how they manipulate earthly elements to carry out God's will. Then, in the second half, Jeffrey K. Lyons joins me with a critical view of neo-Darwinism. He'll discuss the three barriers to life that evolution cannot explain. Proof that life cannot be the result of random forces. And that's Saturday night into Sunday morning on Coast to Coast AM. Hope you can join me. Back to more of my conversation with Jim Harold and your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Jim Harold, the host of the Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harold's Campfire, jimharold.com, the website, and of course the five volumes of True Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfires. And let's dive right into the calls. We'll go to the wildcard line. Nathan is in Middletown, Ohio. Nathan, welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I told your call screener that I wanted to tell you guys a story of how Coast to Coast AM actually led me to understand that I was an abductee. And I had always suspected that there was more to some things that were going on in my life, my whole life, but I was not consciously aware of a lot of it. And
how did Coast specifically convince you?
Well, I was listening. It was in 2013, but it was probably mid-October. And I was listening to an open lines, and somebody called in, and they relayed a story of having encountered a hybrid. And based on this caller's description, I remembered a bit of what maybe I had dismissed as a dream at one time, but had never lost the image. And I was able to focus on this image, and I kind of meditated on it for a week, maybe two. And I had this dream kind of at the end of this two-week period that essentially led to kind of breaking down the walls of my memories. And it kind of revealed, maybe I was just supposed to hear that, and it was supposed to unfold this way. But I literally, the content of the dream, the content of this person's description led me to understand that, I've been having experiences probably my whole life, but it was, and by Thanksgiving, I had actually, by the time Thanksgiving came around that year in 2013, I literally had an abduction that I remembered consciously, but it was more like a military abduction or something. It was like some of the things that were going on, which were kind of like shadow people and things like that, led to this weird abduction. Like maybe they noticed things were happening in my house and around me, maybe this happened and they realized it happened. I don't know, but
Nathan, I'm guessing that you're not alone in that regard, that other people that have listened to Coast have heard something on the air over the years, and it has twigged something, opened up some, neural pathway, and they've suddenly remembered something. Are you glad that you came to this revelation, or do you wish it never happened?
I'm glad I understand that it was happening, because it's answered a lot of questions in my life. But I do wish none of it had happened.
Of course. I meant the memory of it. Nathan, thank you so much for sharing. Right. Jim, do you ever, is something like that happen where someone will hear an episode of your podcast where someone is, told this story, and someone will call you and say, hey, the same thing happened to me?
All the time. And I think that, on a grand scale, Coast to Coast does this, and I think in a teeny tiny scale, my shows do this, is that it provides validation for people. They know they're not alone. They know other people experience these things. And I think that it's it's valuable in that way. When I started Campfire, I thought, oh, this will be a fun little lark. It'll be fun to talk about spooky stories, and that's true. That's all true. But I'm always surprised, even with my little show, how much people would say, you know, it really meant a lot to me because I knew I wasn't alone. I thought I was the only one to experience this, and let alone, you know, the huge scale of Coast to Coast. So I think that's certainly a thing, and certainly borne out by the caller.
All right, Nathan, thank you for that. You spoke of the Mojave Desert earlier. We've got Mel from the Mojave Desert. Mel, welcome to Coast.
Good evening. I was wondering if I could share a story and ask a quick question.
All right, yes, you're on. Go ahead.
Okay. I lived out on an old property. It used to be a mining claim. And anyway, I lived in a converted railroad car. It was a cabin. And I was sitting there one night watching TV, and over to my right in my peripheral vision, I noticed something, you know, lit up. And I turned and I looked, and hovering in the air about the size of a pea, it was just a solid white light. And then it expanded and it became diffuse, and you could see through it. And it illuminated the room. I could see the things on the counter in the kitchen, the soap and whatnot. And then it collapsed back in on itself. That all happened within 7 seconds or so. And I'm thinking, what in the heck was that, you know? And then a month later, it happened again, and somebody was over there this time. And you were just mentioning validation. And they also saw it happen. And they turned to me and they said, what was that? And I said, I don't know. It happened about a month ago, too. And it's like I've experienced things like that, the UFO thing, everything but Bigfoot just about. And I wondered, my question to Mr. Held is, why is it some people seem to just be that person that has that weird thing happened, or, you know, that happens like that, and maybe years apart, it's not all the time, but, you know, whereas some people don't have anything ever happen, anything their whole life. That's my question, basically.
Great question, Mel. I've been asking myself that for years as well. Thank you so much for the great story from the Mojave Desert. Jim, why does it happen to certain people and not others?
Well, I do believe that, and I think it might vary depending on the type of phenomena that we're talking about. When we're talking about ghostly things, I definitely think that some people are more sensitive. It's kind of like when I talk to like one of these really gifted psychics, and I believe there's real psychics out there. And I believe, unfortunately, like every other walk of life, there might be people who claim to be psychics who might not. But when you're talking to psychics, and I do believe, again, there are real legitimate psychics, that it's kind of like a basketball player, let's say a LeBron James, you know. Now, I can take a basketball and I can throw it at a hoop. But I wasn't ever going to be LeBron James. It was his God-given talent. It was his extremely hard work and work ethic. You put them all together and you get a global superstar. Some of that he was born with in terms of, you know, he was going to be, you know, so tall and so forth. And the other stuff, he did it through his hard work. And I think that people are born with gifts, whether it's musical, whether it's broadcasting, whether it's writing, and whether it's psychic ability. And I think that some people are just more sensitive. The UFO thing, I think, might be a little different. I often wonder if people are chosen. You know, you hear about these people who have these multiple experiences over decades and things with alien contact and so forth that they say they've had. And I do wonder if those things are real, are certain people chosen? I don't know the answer, but it is a thought that certainly occurred to me.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. Let's go back to the wild card line. Elaine is in Illinois this evening. Elaine, welcome to Coast.
Yes, hi, good morning. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for calling.
Good. I'm just wondering if you, Jim, have seen or felt anything paranormal in any libraries.
Oh, you know, I haven't. I think we've had a couple stories. Unfortunately, I can't get those from my memory bank right now. But I think we have heard it, and it makes sense, caller, because
if you think about, you think about somebody like John Zaffis and haunted objects and those kind of things, it makes sense because, you know, books, we hold them very close, we read them. Books in libraries have passed through the hands of ostensibly thousands of people. So you would think that they would pick up on some of that energy. So, yeah, I would think that would be a great place for haunting. And I know specifically we've had multiple calls on library hauntings, but I just can't pull the details out of the clouds of my mind right at this moment.
Elaine, why do you ask about libraries? Have you had an experience?
Well, I work in restoration, and yes, we deal with a lot of books. And you can smell the history, you can feel the history. It's very interesting when you're in a library at 3 a.m. and no one else is there but a restoration crew. So it's interesting.
I'll bet. You know, we have a haunted library in Old Thornhill Village, about a 10-minute walk from where I'm sitting. And the mighty Aphrodite and I, we take a daily walk. Sometimes it's around twilight. And we walk past the old village library. It's just a little tiny library. And the legend is that up in the upper, on the second floor in the window, occasionally a little girl will be seen looking out. And not every time we walk by, but I would say, you know, at least once a week, I will quickly take a picture with my phone of that second story window. You know, just to see if I can see anything. Nothing yet, but I'll keep trying. Elaine, thank you for the call. Jim, I wanted to ask you, while we have time, if we can squeeze in one more story of your top 20 campfire stories of 2020. This has to do with this is a Lollapalooza, the eight-legged demon.
Oh, that was the one I was going to pick if you asked me which one I wanted to tell. This is Anthony in Massachusetts, and he's an appraiser for houses for tax purposes. So he says he's seen some weird things. But this was the weirdest. He was coming home one night. He was exhausted after a 10-hour shift. He parked his car down the road from his apartment. Nobody was around, dead quiet. Didn't think much of it at the time, and there's an alley that leads to the dumpsters with a couple of spotlights right before his building, and he saw a figure crouched down with a puffy jacket on. He went to see, and thinking it was a person, wanted to see if this person was okay, maybe a homeless person or something. He said that the figure turned around and it had the face of a child with sunken white eyes, with little black dots in the middle, with stringy hair. As it turns out, he says he realized it was covered with hair and had eight legs. At the end of each of those legs, now this was chilling, this kind of shakes me every time I read it. At the end of each of those legs were tiny baby hands. And this,
oh, Lord.
Whatever it was eating a small cat. As Anthony stood there in shock, it crawled up the side of his apartment building and scurried out of sight. He says he's done his research and had tracked some other things down to talk about a creature like this. But eight legs, baby hands, eating a cat? Oh, man. Ooh.
I don't know if you get the beck and call, you know, whether Mrs. Harold occasionally will say, you know, Jim, come in here, there's a spider. Can you imagine? You know, you roll up a newspaper, you walk into the bathroom, and, oh, I need a bigger newspaper.
Exactly. I think, you know, at that point, I forget the bigger, I would just, I get those Air Jordans again and get them on and see how fast I can.
All right, let's say hi to Mike is in Corpus Christi, Texas. Mike, welcome to Coast.
Thank you for taking my call. Jim, I have a story with a happy ending.
Oh, good.
I've had a lot of paranormal things happen to me because my birthday is October 31st. But this one in particular, years ago I used to be a commercial pilot, and I was flying from a regular route from Chicago to Houston. And this one particular day, I was late getting out of Chicago. It was during the PATCO strike, and I couldn't get a slot, so I had to fly visual flight rules all the way down. And I had a lot of rain, and it was a terrible thing. So when I got crossed over the Oklahoma line, it was at night, and I sensed there was another storm coming. I turned on the landing lights and flew right into a level 5 storm. So I turned around, flew out, and I was disoriented, obviously. But I knew where Norman, Oklahoma was, and I could see the rotary beacon, so I aimed for there, and I was digging around trying to get the approach plates. And this little light wing, like an old Cessna 120 or a 140, flew out of that same cloud. And I thought, little guy, you don't belong in there at all. But I fell in behind him because he obviously was headed for Norman, Oklahoma. So I flew in behind him. We got into the approach. And then I lost sight of him when he turned on the final to land. So when I got to that point and I turned and there was nothing in front of him, I thought, well, he's already down, so I'm not going to worry about it. I got my own problems. So I landed, and just as soon as my wheels touched ground, the sound hit. I taxied up to the airport office and shut down. The manager came running out, helped me get the plane down, tied down. And I went in, and I asked him, I said, you know who that guy was that was flying that light plane right ahead of me? I'd sure like to buy him a drink or take him to dinner or something. And he looked at me real strange and said, Mister, I've been here all day, and there's the only plane to land in here today because of the weather. I said, no.
There you go, ghost plane.
Love it.
Ghost plane. I said, no, yep.
Listen, I've got to close off the segment here. We're up against the top of the hour, but thank you so much for that. That's a great story. I appreciate that, Mike. Jim, thanks for hanging out the last 2 hours. It's been great, as always.
It's been great. You're always great. I love it and love Coast. And Mike, a great story. And thank you all. It's been an honor to be with you all again. And stay spooky and happy Halloween, everybody.
All right, jimherald.com, the Paranormal Podcast, and Jim Harrell's Campfire. All right, when we come back, open lines. Basically, we're just going to continue on in this the same vein. So if you've got a tale of high strangeness, bring it. And if you're on the line and you're on hold, just hold on and we'll get to you just as soon as we can. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM.